Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Well, amazingly enough, early voting in the fall midterm elections in North Carolina starts in just over 2 months. And all across the state and nation, candidates, journalists, political observers, and average citizens are attempting to divine what's going to happen. If past experience is any indication, 2022 should be a big year for Republicans, given that they're the party out of power in Washington. But as veteran pollster Tom Jensen of Raleigh-based Public Policy Polling told me earlier this week, some other important factors could give a big boost to Democrats. Perhaps most notably, the new energy that the Supreme Court's reversal of Roe v. Wade has provided to millions of people of both parties who want to protect reproductive rights. Well, Tom Jensen, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Hey, Rob, it's great to be with you.
I was looking at the calendar, and we're just a little over 2 months to the start of early voting in the midterm election here in North Carolina for the fall. It seems hard to imagine, but what are the polls showing? We've got a lot of elections across the country, still having some primaries as we speak, but I wonder, how are things looking?
I think it's going to be a good year for Republicans, but it's not going to be as good of a year for Republicans as I would have told you 2 or 3 months ago. The Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade has really helped to do two things that are to Democrats' benefit. One thing that it's done is really help reinvigorate the Democratic base. I think we were headed towards an election where Republicans were really fired up to vote and Democrats didn't have much motivation. And the Supreme Court decision has given Democrats that motivation that they didn't have before. I think the other big piece of what the Supreme Court decision did was maybe cause some of these suburban voters, people who had voted for Mitt Romney in 2012, but then voted for Joe Biden in 2020, those folks generally, I think, were inclined to go back to voting Republican once Trump was out of there. They weren't really Democrats. They just were people who thought Trump was really bad news. And I think the Supreme Court decision has gotten some of those sorts of voters rethinking, maybe Republicans in general are just too extreme. Maybe this isn't just a Trump thing and we need to keep voting Democratic. So those kinds of voters were like a big part of why, for instance, Republicans won the governor's race in Virginia last year. Mm-hmm. That election was now. I don't think they'd still win it because I think a lot of those suburban, well-educated sort of Romney to Biden voters this time around are thinking more, we might just need to vote Democratic.
Interesting. You mentioned Trump, of course, and he remains the elephant in the room in so many ways. His testimony taking the fifth in a civil case, his FBI agent seizing documents in his Mar-a-Lago home. But yet it seems that Republicans are still pretty much rallying to his defense. It seems that he's still having an effect on Republican primaries anyway.
Yeah. And another piece of why this year might be better for Democrats than it should be, given how unpopular President Biden is that for the most part, the candidates that Donald Trump is endorsing are winning Republican primaries for the Senate and governor. And in a lot of these cases, he's endorsing people who are really extreme, who make the races more winnable for Democrats than if it was just sort of a moderate mainstream sort of Republican candidate getting put forth. There's four key Democratic-held Senate seats that Republicans sort of need to win if they're going to get control of the Senate. And in Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada, which have had their primaries so far, the Trump-endorsed candidate won in all three of those races. And then the fourth one is New Hampshire, which hasn't had its primary yet. But I think all three of those races on paper are places where Democrats should be trailing right now because they're places that Democrats only won by like a point in 2020. Now you have President Biden with an approval rating in the 30s. Usually that combination of things, you would see the Republicans up by 5-6 points in those Senate races. And instead, the Democrats have small leads in all of them, I think because the Republicans have put forth such weak candidates. And you can add Pennsylvania to that list, too, where it looks like Democrats are probably favored to pick up a Republican-held seat. That's another place where a Trump-endorsed candidate, who's a pretty weak candidate, got in there. So in that sense, already, Trump is doing Democrats a favor in a lot of these places.
One place where he has endorsed a candidate and one wonders what its impact will be is, of course, here in North Carolina, where Ted Budd owes much of his success for winning the Republican Senate primary to Donald Trump's endorsement over Pat McCrory and others.
I wonder how that's looking for him. It seems that Sherry Beasley was clearly an underdog going into the race as a Democratic nominee, but seems to be running a pretty spirited campaign. She's raised a lot of money and is kind of keeping her face out there front and center on some pretty popular issues.
Yeah, you know, I told people 6 months ago, just speaking very frankly, that I expected that even though I think Sherry Beasley is a good candidate, a very strong candidate, it's usually just hard to overcome the political atmosphere. And I thought based on what the political atmosphere seemed to be 6 months ago, I told people, you know, I thought even if she run a really great campaign, she'd probably lose by 6 to 8 points. And instead, this is really shaping up right now to be a toss-up race. The polls, you know, pretty consistently find it close. Some of them have Beasley up, some of them have Budd up, but it's something that's much more reminiscent of the 2014 race between Kay Hagan and Tom Tillis that Democrats did end up losing, but only by a couple points. It's much more like that than the 2010 midterm Senate race where Richard Burr beat Elaine Marshall by 12 points. I sort of figured we would end up with an outcome that was somewhere in between those last two midterm Senate races. And instead, it's looking much more like the one that was super close. The one thing that's a big question, both in the North Carolina Senate race and in all these other Senate races that we're talking about, is that we're repeatedly seeing in these races that the Democrats are polling at like 46-47%. And then almost all of the undecideds are people who are unhappy with Joe Biden. So I think the big question is, are those undecideds who are unhappy with Joe Biden and end up moving to the Republicans en masse, which, you know, could mean that maybe Beasley's at 46 right now, but she doesn't get much higher than 46 or 47 in the end? Or, you know, do those people end up splitting pretty evenly? I can already sort of see a world developing where, let's say, in North Carolina, that Beasley's tied in the polls 2 weeks out. She ends up losing by 4 or 5, and everybody says, oh, the polls were terrible again. Could very well be that the polls were right, but we're seeing systemically when we look within the polls in North Carolina and elsewhere that the undecideds should be Republican leaning. It's just a question of whether they actually go there or not.
Fascinating. We're talking with Tom Jensen, who's of course one of our nation's top pollsters. He's the pollster at Public Policy Polling based here in North Carolina. You mentioned President Biden. He's had some victories recently. He seems perhaps maybe to be rallying a little bit. We've had the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act. And really, when you look at the list of accomplishments he's had, given the tools he's had to work with, it's hard to see what it is that he should have done or could have done. He's actually moved this country forward in a lot of different areas, but does it look like he's still going to be a drag on the Democratic candidates across the country? Is there any chance he's rallying at all here?
Well, it's a really interesting situation with Biden's approval numbers. His numbers are clearly a lot worse than Trump's ever were. I mean, Trump was unpopular, but Biden's more unpopular. And the reason that Biden's more unpopular is that you did have that sort of cult-like aspect where no matter what happened to Trump, 90% of his voters still said that they approved of him. That's not the case with Biden. Throughout most of July, we were finding that his approval rating with people who voted for him was only in the 60s. About a third of people who voted for him either disapproved of him or said that they didn't have an opinion one way or the other. The last few weeks, I think things have gotten a little better for him. We're tending to find that his approval rating with his own voters is up into the 70s, which gets his overall approval rating nationally closer to the 40% where it had been in the 30s. But even though Biden has worse approval numbers than Trump, what's different and what's good news for Democrats about Biden's poor approval numbers is there's a lot of people who don't approve of Biden, but still plan to vote Democratic. Historically, in a midterm, it's sort of like if you like the president, you vote for his party. And if you don't like the president, you don't vote for his party. So historically, a president with an approval rating in the 30s like Biden, his party would be in terrible shape. But it's unusual this year in that there's a lot of people who say, I'm not that happy with the job that Biden's doing, but I'm certainly still voting Democratic. So that's a big contrast. Whereas when Trump might have had slightly higher approval ratings, if you didn't like Trump, you weren't voting Republican in the 2018 midterm. So it's sort of a complicating factor. But the other thing that is sort of complicated about this is it means if Biden's approval numbers get better, that doesn't necessarily mean that things get better for Democrats, because the kind of people who don't approve of him right now, who maybe in 2 months will say they do approve of him, they're the kind of people who are already voting Democratic while not approving of him. So even if they move to approving of him, that doesn't necessarily mean more people voting Democratic. This is all very unusual for a midterm election.
It's fascinating. Our politics continue to evolve. I know we've had the January 6th events going on. So you mentioned, we've talked about Donald Trump. We've got the committee coming back in September. I know Liz Cheney, boy, that's a fascinating race to watch. I wonder if you've followed that at all, whether this Republican maverick will somehow survive or whether she will be added to the list of enemies of Trump who have been dispatched by Republican voters.
Yeah, I don't think Liz Cheney's prospects are very good for getting another term. They've been making a protracted effort to try to get Democrats to vote into the Republican primary there to sort of try to help bail her out. But I think the simple reality is that there aren't very many Democrats in Wyoming to do that. And we've talked about this, I think, Rob, a lot over the years, that people say, why don't more Republicans stand up to Trump? And just in the last couple of weeks, Peter Meyer got voted out in the primary in Michigan. Jamie Herrera Butler got voted out in the primary in Washington, and we're likely to see the same thing with Liz Cheney. You know, you may end up in the next printing of Profiles in Courage that gets written for what you have done if you were a Republican who stood up to Trump, but you're most likely not going to be staying in office for another term. So that's just sort of the kind of trade-off that these politicians are having to make. And I think the reality is that what we're seeing most Republican politicians do is go with political expediency instead of political courage.
Coming to the end of our time with pollster Tom Jensen. Tom, I wonder if there are any other factors you would want to share about what's going to happen in North Carolina this fall. We've got some very closely divided legislative bodies with just a few seats could make a huge difference as to whether Democrats are able to hold on to gubernatorial vetoes. I assume it's probably safe to assume that the Republicans still have a great shot at winning control, super majorities of both houses, given that both legislative bodies remain at least somewhat gerrymandered. It seems hard to imagine, perhaps, that they won't do very well this fall. But I wonder if you've been following the legislative races here in North Carolina.
Yeah, we find that voters in the state are pretty evenly divided about how they plan to vote for the legislature, sort of at the macro level. And I think what that translates to at the district level is that Democrats would win enough seats to still uphold Governor Cooper's vetoes. Republicans would have to have a pretty good advantage statewide to win enough seats to actually overturn that. But the big thing, I think, just for Democrats is going to be getting their vote out. The biggest reason that Joe Biden just fell short and that Cal Cunningham just fell short in North Carolina in 2020 was that Republicans turned out at a rate about 6 points higher than Democrats did. If Democrats and Republicans had turned out at the same rate, Democrats would have won the races at the top of the ticket. Fascinating thing that happened with that Kansas abortion vote last week. It was the first election in decades where more Democrats turned out percentage-wise than Republicans. So it shows the energy right now for Democrats. And if they can translate that in places like North Carolina, they'll have good outcomes.
Well, as we said, just a couple of months to go. So we'll be paying very close attention. We know you will. And we'll look forward to checking in with you later this year to get your take on these races as they continue to evolve. Thanks so much,
Rob,
for your work.
Thanks.
Coming up next, we'll talk to a pair of advocates who say it's long past time for North Carolina to rethink the very idea of the death penalty. Stay with us.